Living with Ghosts, the inside story from a troubled mind, is in Living with Ghosts. A veteran journalist, Brian Rowan, retraces his steps through Northern Ireland's conflict years as he delves into the darkness of those times. It's a fascinating and timely book. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, Brian Rowan himself. Brian, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us. There is, I suppose, a feeling amongst several people, a vast part of the majority, that what happened in Northern Ireland during the late 60s, 70s, through to the Good Friday Agreement is now dusted and gone, and we should just draw a line and move on. And that perhaps is an oversimplification of a situation that isn't going to be neatly put in a box and put away.
I think that's right, Giles. In this process, in every major moment within this process, we've needed outside help, we've needed international help. So when it came to the political agreement that you referenced in 1998, we needed Senator George Mitchell from the States, here with the backing of President Clinton. When it came to the issue of how we would get rid of arms, we needed a Canadian general, General John de Shasslin. And when it came to the issue of police reform, we needed Chris Patton. Yet on this big question of our past and our future, we think we can do it ourselves. And that's just nonsense. There have been a number of political attempts to create a process. I think we need international help. I think we need an amnesty. And I think we need a report that's written with pens free of emotional ink, as I describe it, because we're all too closely attached to this thing, emotionally involved, stitched into the fabric of this place. So unless we think clearly, unless we think about international help, then I think people will be talking in 20 or 30 years' time, not about drawing a line, but why we haven't attempted to put that past to rest.
I mean, do you think there is the temptation to think, well, that was then and this is now? And if you look at the way that, you know, for example, Belfast and Laganside has moved on, the Belfast Development Corporation, the stuff they did there, the fact that we now have events, sporting events, music events happening in Northern Ireland, it's, and you know, we look at the bad old days, and the problem may be that if the process isn't continued, it may, and people get disaffected, and we now have a new generation, and it marks us both of our age, that are growing up who perhaps didn't know the horror of the of the troubles and the deep divisions, that they may think, well, this piece isn't working either, and you may see a return to the Armalite, as the, you know, as the saying went.
Yeah, well, I think the wars are over, Giles, and I think what we need to do is to grow up in our politics. I have been involved in numerous conversations over many years now, in rooms with people who were in the trenches and the opposite trenches to each other. And I think the people who have been closest to the conflict period are more tuned in to what needs to happen to help the peace grow. So I think it's on this major issue of legacy and what to do with it that we're stuck. This place is very different. You know, when I hear people say nothing has changed, I know what I reported on during the conflict years. You know, in 1 week that stretched from the Shankill bomb through to the Grey Steel shootings and all of the killings in between. So what I'm saying to you, Giles, is everything has changed. We have a missing piece in our piece, and that is how we put the past to rest. And you know, I'm very clear about what needs to happen. We need to take it away from us. We need to give it to an international team. We need that report written from outside of us. And then alongside that, we do all of the practical help, and we allow people to tell their individual stories. But we have to accept in this divided society, there is never going to be an agreed truth or one truth, Giles, in relation to what happened over a period of several decades. So we have to come to terms with those different and competing narratives, understanding that we don't have to accept every word of everyone's story, but simply accept that that is their story.
You've called the book Living with Ghosts, and you've retraced those steps, and there are ghosts in Northern Ireland. I mean, there are people whose bodies still have disappeared and have never been found. For you to go back to those situations that you were in as a correspondent in the 70s and the 80s, you said, yeah, everything has changed. But, you know, the thing with ghosts is they echo. You can still feel them in the fabric of buildings, in the looks of people, in the memories of families. So how difficult was it to if you like, reopen those wounds, or have those wounds actually ever been closed, or will they ever be assuaged, if you will?
Well, I make this reference to the mind's wardrobe, Giles. And I say it doesn't allow us to throw things out. You know, so I, in my reporting of the conflict period, had to make contact with all sides, speaking directly with the IRA, with the loyalist organizations, with those in military and security and intelligence and in politics, in churches, those who had the pulse of their communities. So, and there was a rewind button in every one of us, Giles. So when I press that button, I'm back in that period of the late 80s, 1990s. That killing surge from the loyalists as we moved towards the ceasefires of 1994. I'm pretty sure I took pretty much every statement from the loyalist organizations after each of those killings in that period. So I say in the book that we can get used to war, Giles. We all become dehumanized. The abnormal becomes normal. And the ghosts for me is that we treated that period of the conflict as news and people became numbers. And I think one of the things that we have to do now, when you talk to someone about the Northern Ireland conflict, they'll rhyme you off a series of headlines, Giles. But those people who died on their own were forgotten. You know, I would often say that people here died for 2 hours, meaning that, you know, someone may have been dead on the lunchtime news. There'd be another killing before the tea time news. And that killing just a couple of hours previously would very quickly be forgotten. So I think one of our big challenges is how we remember all of the dead and how we create a place of remembrance which allows us to remember all of the dead. And, you know, I've made the point, a very famous artist here in Ireland, Colin Davidson, painted the Queen, painted President Clinton, Ed Sheeran, Brad Pitt, but he painted an exhibition called Silent Testimony, 18 portraits of people who had been touched by the very worst of the conflict years. It became a sacred place, Giles. Someone likened it to the Stations of the Cross. Over 100,000 people visited it while it was in the Ulster Museum. And I think how we come to address our past has to be imagined from outside of politics, outside of the media, outside of those who were at the coalface of this. And someone such as Colin Davidson has shown us in his work how this might be done. And if only politics would let go of this and give it to someone else, then we might get to a better place more quickly than has been possible up to this point.
It's a point you make about a lunchtime killing becomes, you know, dead for 2 hours. And in the 80s and 90s, before social media and before rolling news, you know, that would have an impact. But now, in a society where we are bombarded from all angles by information, it is very easy to become desensitized. And I'm just thinking, then there's also a language that we use in reporting, and it becomes it's when you hear, you know, when you hear people interview military people and they start to say military words even though they aren't even in the military, but they start saying things like, you know, the provos and bandit country, and it's a very sort of macho and slight distasteful way of looking at it, and this was a sort of collective thing, wasn't it, during the height of during the worst times, because people would because Northern Ireland is still part of the United Kingdom, but it was kind of, and here comes a very thin line I'm about to tread on, Brian, it was kind of over there. And so, therefore, it was part, but it wasn't part. And so we could, as a mainland UK person, you could look at it and go, well, thank goodness I don't live over there, because they're all somewhat different. And that's not a mature way of looking at a multi-dimensional problem.
Yeah. I think processes like this, Giles, demand of us more careful thought and more careful language. And I often talk about that tug of war in peace, which is this tug of war between your professional duty and your work and your citizenship. So I live here. I'm part of this. I'm stitched into the fabric of it. I've got two sons and a daughter. I want a better future for them than we experienced. Now, that doesn't mean to say we blow trumpets for the peace process. My job in the conflict period as we moved into the peace process was to provide the best information I could from the best range of sources. And I knew on occasions, Giles, that what I was saying on radio and saying on television would do damage to the peace process. But how could I have gone along with some of the spin of the peace process, sat in a studio and said one thing, which, you know, turns out to be not the case, and then go back into the studio the next week or the next month and expect people to believe me? So I think I tried as best I could with the best range of sources I could develop to tell this story of the conflict period and into the piece as best I could. I think, and I said this to you, Giles, that some of the people who best understand peace are the people who were on the front lines of the war. And there are still some people in our politics who want to rerun the conflict period on a political stage and with the silly language of we won, you lost, I was right, you were wrong. So I hope in Living with Ghosts, people will come to understand better how we got to this point, but also that we're on another bend on the road, if you like, Giles, that we need to find this peace that is called reconciliation and healing. I was in an event last night where the former Methodist president, it was the book launch of in my hometown last night, where the former Methodist president, Harold Good, spoke. He was one of the witnesses when the IRA decommissioned. And he talked about that handshake between Martin McGuinness and the Queen. And he said, it's not good enough for us simply to applaud that if we're not prepared to do it ourselves. So the next challenge is for all of us to reach out, to stand in the shoes of others and try to better understand them.
If an individual had a trauma, they would call in, or had post-traumatic stress disorder, you would call in a professional from the outside to help. Can we then make perhaps the slightly clumsy analogy that what Northern Ireland has been through in the past 50 years is a collective trauma, a collective stress disorder. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's a problem that you can do work yourself with as a nation, but also, as you said before, you need a modern-day Clinton and not a modern-day Canadian general to help you point out the road that you cannot see because you are so involved with what is going on.
Yeah, I agree with that, Giles, that we need help from outside of us. Now, part of this book is me telling my story about how this weighed me down. So one of my colleagues, when I spoke to him in January about writing this book, said to me that when you left, he was talking to me, when I left the BBC in 2005, he said, some of us knew you were having something of a meltdown. Now, I wouldn't call it a meltdown, Giles. I felt a weighing down, a wearing down. I certainly felt broken down. I was physically and mentally wrecked. I didn't go for professional help. I spoke with my wife. I spoke to a number of people who were close to me. And that's my way of dealing with it. Because in the conflict period, Giles, I was afraid to talk in my sleep. You know, that's... And I describe in the book, there was a loneliness in the secretiveness of the work that I had to do and the contacts that I had to have. You know, I remember, you know, some people would say to me, that's a great job you have. And, you know, many years after what I'm about to describe now, I started to discuss it. So in 1992, the IRA killed three of their own people. They left their bodies on the border. I, with a camera crew and a small number of journalists, came across two of those bodies in South Armagh. The following day, the IRA took myself and a journalist colleague away with our eyes taped up, goggles on, to meet spokesman for the IRA organization who read us a statement, which was written on toilet paper at length on toilet paper, because if the house was raided, they would flush it immediately. But tape back on our eyes, goggles back on our eyes. This was the statement on the executions, as the IRA would have described them, of the three people the night before. Now, I in my reporting, there was a line something like the IRA has issued a statement this afternoon. In 1992, there was none of that detail I've just given you. But how could anyone experience those events, discovering bodies, being taken away with your eyes taped up and goggles on in a period where you could easily have been stopped at a security checkpoint and be completely compromised and not be affected? So I don't know how some people who say it didn't affect me managed to create that physical and psychological distance from events here. So I spoke in that period to my wife and to very few others. That's why I managed to get through. But the more we try to bottle this up, the more it's likely to explode inside as giants. So the sooner we get some help in the wider sense, and the sooner we find a way to put the past to rest, and the sooner we give the shaping of what next to the future generations, the better for this place and for all of us who live in it.
The book is called Living with Ghosts, The Inside Story from a Troubled Mind. It's by Brian Ronan, who has been speaking to today. Brian, if people want to find you online, where can they follow your progress and keep up to what's happening with the book and also yourself?
Well, I use the Twitter account at Brian PJ Rowan.
The book is called Living with Ghosts. The Inside Story is from a Troubled Mind. It's by Brian Ronan. Brian, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Giles.